Butterfly by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry. Welcome to the Qumran Report. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. My name is Melvin Ishmael Johnson, coming at you live from Skid Row Studios. Our call-in number is 800-893-9562. You can listen to us live or download our show and any past show by Googling in Qumran Report. Now, this week on the Qumran Report, we will hear some new community voices with our in-studio guest, Deborah Penberty, and also an interview with Dennis Rowe, the director of a new musical, Philly, that is opening this weekend at the Union Center for the Arts in downtown Los Angeles. And I would like to start off our show tonight with an interview I did with the director of Philly, Dennis Rowe. Now, this is Melvin Ishmael Johnson with the Qumran Report, and I'm delighted to have on the line talking the director of the musical Philly. Dennis, how you doing this morning?
Sun is shining. It's a wonderful day.
Yes, beautiful day. Now, can you tell our listening audience a little about your background and where you grew up at, and how did you get off into directing and writing?
I've been actually directing and writing for quite some time now. I just kind of fell into it. I was an actor, didn't really enjoy that too much. And a friend of mine he was doing a play and suggested I come in and stage manage it for him. I didn't know anything about stage managing, but he said, I'll teach you. So that happened, and then I kind of got, the hang of being behind the scenes. And that just went into, it expanded into the other areas, directing, writing, light design, choreography, everything it takes to put a show on. That's kind of how it happened.
Yes. Now, where's your hometown? Where did you grow up at?
I grew up in Indio, California, in the desert.
Yes, it's hot out there.
With the cactus.
Yeah, beautiful. Out by Palm Springs. Yeah.
Out by Palm Springs, exactly.
Yeah. Now, can you tell us, what is the play Philly about?
Well, Philly is inspired by true events. It happened in 1985 in Philadelphia. They dropped, the city of Philadelphia dropped a bomb on its citizens. And 61 homes were burned, two city blocks were leveled, and 11 people lost their lives. So it was at that time a city that was divided. You talk about the city of brotherly love, but at that particular time, I don't know how much love that was going on in the city. But so it's inspired by that event. However, as bleak as it sounds, we try to emphasize and put the spotlight on the survivors. We put the spotlight on Birdie Africa, a little 13-year-old child that at the time he was 13-year-old, and how he survived. And it talks about, no matter what you're going through, you can survive what's going on in your life, tragedies or drama, anything. You can survive. And then there's the African-American mayor. He was the first black mayor of Philadelphia at that time, W. Wilson Good, who was a man of faith. And all this was going on around him. This happened during his tenure. So he had to draw on his faith to get through it. And so that's another thing we highlight. With God, you can make it. You have the faith, you can make it.
And then also,
those are the two things that we kind of really highlight in the project.
Yep, and also another thing that I find important or unique is the fact that this was the second time that a black community had been bombed in the United States, going all the way back to Tulsa Wall Street in the 20s.
Right. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Now, let me ask you this. What is the message you hope to leave with your audience?
Again, just about, you know, first of all, it's historic.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that we need to know our history. We need to know what has happened in the past so we can know where to go.
Mm-hmm.
Just like you talked about, you know, what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Well, this was just as important, and a lot of people don't know this.
Mm-hmm.
This particular story. So I think it's important that we get stories out that tell us our history, that are a part of our history.
Mm-hmm.
But also, it's a human nature story.
Mm-hmm. And then another thing that stands out for me, I was up in the Leimert Park last night with the Roby Theater at the Vision Theater, passing out some flyers and talking to some individuals, and I was so surprised how many adults that they had no knowledge of the move situation and the bombing in Philadelphia. That's why I think this play is so important. Let me ask you this: why did you choose the musical form to put it in?
I get that question a lot. Music transcends whatever's going on. You know, if there's racism, music kind of transcends that. If there's the different classes, social classes, music transcends that. And it provokes different type of emotion in people. You can have songs that provoke anger, that provoke, you know, sadness, happiness. You know that song, I'm happy, makes you happy when you hear it.
Yes. So
it really moves emotion, and this is what better story to have music in.
Mm-hmm.
That's emotional.
Yes. Now, two more quick questions. Can you just tell us a little about the composer, Gail Johnson?
Gail Johnson is awesome. She mm-hmm. is off the chain. She's awesome. She is the musical director for Norman Brown. She's been playing since she was, I heard her tell someone she's been playing since she was probably 3 or 4 years old. She's always wanted to play, and she's been involved with music from that early age. And she has her own band, Jazz and Pink.
Mm-hmm.
She's played at different churches, and she's traveling now, as a matter of fact. I am today.
Yeah.
So she has been, she's awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome. I know she's won a couple of American Music Awards and different things of that nature.
Oh, yeah, looking forward to that. Now, can you give us the contact and ticket information for Philly?
I certainly can, yes. The name of the show, first of all, is Philly again. Philly, Philly, Philly. The show is Saturday, July 5th at 3 and 8. Sunday, July 6th at 5 o'clock p.m. at Union Center for the Arts, which is just blocks from the Music Center downtown L.A. Ticket information is, tickets are available at Inglewood Tickets, or you can call 818-754-4405.
Mm-hmm. And that address is?
The address of the theater is 120 Judge John Iso. AISO Street.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Just blocks from the Music Center.
Okay, thank you very much. It's Dennis Rowe. He's the director of the great musical Philly.
Philly.
Yes. Okay, that is Dennis Rowe, and we will hear more about the show in our community calendar. I'm delighted to have with us in the studio, Deborah Penberthy. Deborah, welcome to the Coon Round Report.
Thank you so much, Melvin. Glad to be here.
Can you tell our listening audience a little about your background and how did you become a singer?
Yeah, I'd love to. I've been singing all my life. I was Annie in fifth grade or sixth grade, and I just always loved music. And I wrote songs when I was young, but I kind of ignored that part. That part really wasn't encouraged as much as getting good at performing, like on the piano and singing. Went to music school, Florida State. I'm from Florida. And really met with the classical musical establishment and didn't feel a click with that. So I kind of went off on the side and studied music theory because that allowed me to do whatever music I wanted to do. I was still doing other people's music, but I was doing more challenging music, more interesting music, and music that hadn't been done a million times by a million different people. Uh-huh. I also did a double major in criminology, and it was Marxist criminology. So I was studying things like how the drug laws were racially motivated and things like that. And I got interested in nuclear disarmament and things like that. And so I did a peace studies internship at the end. Mm-hmm. And by the time I was done with music school, I was kind of done with music temporarily. And I went and worked for Greenpeace for 4 years, running canvas offices and raising money and doing things about international trade issues and how that's affecting labor and environmental issues around the world. Then it took me a little while to get my music back and like get my sense of myself and what I wanted to do. I started composing, and then I moved out to LA to go to CalArts. Mm-hmm. I was writing performance art pieces that were kind of political, that had music and dance. Like I did one that was following the historical place that the Coca-Cola company plays in my family. My father was the vice president of Minute Maid, which was owned by Coca-Cola. So I kind of followed like the meaning of Coca-Cola through how my grandmother related to it, who was kind of a corporate wife in the 50s with the cocktail parties, and you know how Coca-Cola kind of represents like patriotism. You know, it represents like America and its role in World War II. It's like a good symbol. And then my mom, who's a little bit less politically involved and more focused on family. And then me, who's very radical and knew what like Coca-Cola was doing in Colombia, where they were actually funding the paramilitary, you know, to stop unions in Colombia. But still, around the world, it's seen as this symbol of status and even really like freedom. So I was doing pieces like that that relate to, that involved music and that had a political content. But then when I graduated, I got a job working with musicians at a university here, and I kind of forgot that I was creating my own stuff, and I started doing classical music because you can make pretty good money at it in LA. And that was my time of wandering in the desert, honestly, because I've come back to who I am in music, which is a creator of music, and composing. I love I write my own. I'm a singer-songwriter, but my stuff's pretty strongly crafted, and you're gonna hear some stuff tonight.
Do you perform with bands and stuff like that?
Well, yeah, I performed a little bit with bands, and I'm making my first CD, which is just like a complete dream come true. I've been writing since the late 90s, but I've always been taking care of other people, you know, fundraising for Greenpeace or working with young musicians at one of the major universities here.
Do you do any jazz or contemporary type pieces?
Well, I did French cabaret, like I sing like C'est presque au bout du monde, ma barque vagabonde. So I do that some, and I'd like to start a band with that, like a Django Reinhardt, Edith Piaf sort of collaboration. But mostly I love to do my own stuff, and so my producer on my CD is putting together an amazing band, and we went in this week to the studio, The Lair. It's a full-service studio with like, I don't know, 50 different retro keyboards and every sort of old-fashioned mic you could think of.
What do you think about the music scene here in Los Angeles, especially classical music and all? Like, you think it's up to par with the rest of the country?
Well, I mean, in L.A., everything that you could ever want in the arts, I think they have on an international level. The difficulty with L.A., it's so spread out. And if you are a musician, honestly, I think it's even harder to access the arts because, you know, like, I'm putting on this show on July 17th and Troop Unitarian in Pasadena, and like four of my friends can come, you know, because they're going to be, oh, I've got a rehearsal at the Hollywood Bowl, or I've got this in Orange County or that. So that, you know, the 2 hour square radius that we deal with is the challenge. But God, yes, I happened to go by accident. I went, I thought my teacher, Kathleen Grace, is an amazing singer, was singing at Room 5 on Saturday night. So I went to see her, and it turns out I was a day late. And there were these two acts that were freaking amazing. So, yeah, I mean, every night you can catch amazing music here.
Well, let me ask you this. Let's talk about, what is the Half the Sky movement? Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah, that's how we met, right, Melvin? So there's a movement called the Half the Sky movement, and it is an organized movement meant to stop the oppression of women and girls around the world. And the idea behind it is that, you know, if you look at the 19th century, sort of the issue of the 19th century was ending slavery, or at least ending the acceptance of it. You know, at the beginning of the century, that was considered unthinkable. by the end of the century, it was like, of course we have to end this. So Nicholas Kristof and Cheryl Wood-Dunn have written this book, Half the Sky, which is an amazing book. They're New York Times Pulitzer Prize winners. They wrote this book, and it's all about the things that are happening to women and girls around the world. And they are investigative reporters. So Nicholas Kristof would go with a woman who's going to go liberate a brothel and film it. And, you know, risking his life, because these are dangerous situations. I'm talking about, like, in India and around the world, although some of these things are happening in America for sure, which I know you're going to talk about. Mm-hmm. So he would go and film that. And then the thing is that half the book is about all these terrible things that are happening, but then it always talks about what people are doing to change it. Like, there's a village in some country in Africa, I don't remember the country, where the men are expected to beat the women. So the women just decided no more, and they went and made their own village. No men are allowed, and they have all women run businesses, and the boy children need to leave after a certain age, and they've just, you know, taken it upon themselves. So I think sometimes people get really overwhelmed when they hear all these terrible things are happening, but the whole point of the Half the Sky movement and the book is that it's not, we don't have to reinvent the wheel. We know that there are things that can work. There's economic pressures, there's foreign policy. There's a bill right now that Barbara Boxer has reintroduced into the Senate, which is called the International Anti-Violence Against Women Act. Mm-hmm. And it has a lot of support, but it's been, I think it's been around for 15 years, mm-hmm. and but it's never passed. So if we can get that passed, it'll mean that foreign policy, when we give to another country, they need to make efforts to change the status of women.
Well, let me ask you this question. It's something that, you know, that always puzzled me. And I watch what happened with the last election here in Los Angeles mm-hmm. when they had a female that was running for mm-hmm. office. And, you know, women's is a huge majority all over the world.
Almost 51%. Yeah, more, so you would think.
More than
yeah.
Men's. And then I also think, I thought about what happened in the Trayvon Martin situation when they had the jury, you know, that made that decision. It was made up, was it all women's on that jury or something like that? I think it was. It might have been all women's or whatever it was.
I was
like
buried
that.
In my own private hell at that time, so I didn't.
Down in Florida, which is a whole different world.
I'm from that area, and people have a different take on it. Actually, my mom went to the rally to support Trayvon. And she said it was an amazing event. She was one of the only white women there, and her car got stuck in the mud, and then these people came out and helped her, and there was all this really nice energy.
Yeah, but here's what I want to know. It looked like, you know, if all of the stars are aligned and everything worked out, it looked like we're getting ready to have our first female president.
Might be. Hillary Clinton. I keep our fingers crossed.
You think that's going to make a difference in the whole mindset of the male-dominated world?
I think we had a really strong battle to fight. It's like Obama. Like, that's an amazing thing that happened, but look at the backlash. Mm-hmm. Look at the racism that's come out. And so I think the Half the Sky movement is really, it's an international movement. They're making an umbrella. And the name of the movement comes from a Chinese proverb that says that women hold up half the sky. Mm-hmm. This is just like you're saying, like, women are the majority of the earth or about half of the earth. So we need them. And so I think that it's not going to just be one leader. It's going to be you and me and everybody here doing their part to make a difference in their local communities and internationally. And people can go to the halfthesky movement.org. Mm-hmm. It's just halfthesky movement.org. And there are a million things on there about how to take action. Mm-hmm. And that's what I'm doing with my music. And I think you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, but now before I get to that, just tell me, how did you get involved with it? How did you get involved with that?
Well, honestly, I was studying songwriting, and I had a song due. I had to write a song every 2 weeks, and I'm a procrastinator. So it was about Saturday, and I hadn't picked the topic for the song, and I take my songs really seriously. Like, it needs to be something I care about. So I was sitting there, and I listened to the radio, and this Darwinian feminist named Amy Parrish, who works at USC, she studies the bonobo monkeys. She was being interviewed, and she was talking about how there is a biological or evolutionary precedent for a more matriarchal society, and that's the bonobo monkeys. They're on the same level with chimpanzees as far as the evolutionary chain, but they're less known. And they are very much sisters. They will take care of each other's babies, which chimpanzees they're more tribal, and they will shun the babies of other you know, female chimpanzees. So these bonobo monkeys are bisexual. They are, they will help each other out. They're not violent. And so this is a, this is proof that we have in our genetics the ability to cooperate and to have women be in the forefront and to have love be the way that power is manifested.
Mm-hmm. Well, no doubt in that, because, you know, some of the ancient Egyptian and Greek societies, you know, women's...
Yeah,
were,
but know, most people don't know about that.
Yeah, they were worshiping and dominating. Mm-hmm.
The goddess societies, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you this. What is the Half the Sky Song Project?
Yeah, so
how did that come about? Can you explain
yeah,
that?
Yeah, so
to
I was listening to the radio show, and I was, when she was talking about this Darwinian feminism, I was like, well, this is just like the Half the Sky. You know, we have to get this, you know, we need to take this evidence and we need to say, hey, it's time. We need to stop all this violence against women, the sex trafficking, the genital mutilation, the abortion of female children, all kinds of things like that. So I decided to write a theme song for the Half the Sky movement. I knew about the movement. I'd read the book. There had been a group at my at the church I was going to at the time, which was All Saints Episcopal in Pasadena, which is a wonderful, very progressive church. I know you guys are familiar.
Yeah, George Reed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And so I decided to write a theme song as the song that I was going to have do, but knowing that I really wanted to do something with it. So I wrote this song, and then after I wrote it, I was really happy with it, and people reacted really well to it. And so I decided to have this project where I go and I sing this song at houses of worship. It could be other places too. It doesn't have to be religious based, but right now I'm singing it at Unitarian churches mainly. Like yesterday was at Santa Monica Unitarian. So I go and I sing the song, and then the worship leader talks about the Half the Sky movement and then asks people to take some action. And I'll usually prep them because sometimes they haven't been familiar with it. Like Frank Wolf at the UUC wasn't familiar with the movement, but he obviously he supports women's rights. So he then asked people to sign the petition to support the International Anti-Violence Against Women Act.
Mm-hmm.
And then I didn't do that there, but at Santa Monica, I had a table. So people would come up and I would talk to them about these issues. And then one person said, hey, how can I get involved in my local community? So that prompted me to do some research on what people can do in Los Angeles. So it's a synergistic thing, and I'm having this event on July 17th to fundraise for my EP, and I'm hoping to have someone there from CAST, which is an award-winning organization in Los Angeles that deals with people who have been in trafficking.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned earlier about composing, and I meet a lot of composers. And most of them seem to be piano players. And is that one of the central components of composing music? Why is that so important?
Yeah, well, most composers, if they're coming up to classical, they're pianists to start with, or at least guitarists, because it's harmonic. So, like, I grew up playing the flute. Well, I started with piano, and then someone handed me a flute because they were like, you're the fifth girl in line. Here's your flute. Because that is a very gendered thing that's been studied. And so I kind of lost that sense of harmony. In fact, you're helping me remember why that happened, because flute is usually a soprano instrument. We play something high, maybe the melody. But piano, you know, you got it in your fingers. You've got the rhythm. You've got the harmony. You've got the melody. You got 10 of them, you know. So, yeah, that's why.
That's the main reason most of your great composers are also...
Yeah, well, and probably also just the respect that piano has in the classical world, you know. Like I always tell parents are saying, what's a good instrument to start on? Start on the piano, because it's visual. You can see the highs and you can see the lows. You know, on trombone, you might do this, but you don't really feel where the highs and the lows are, I wouldn't say, you know.
So it's a good instrument to train young people.
That's wonderful, yeah.
To get involved with the
art. It's very social, you know, people can gather around it. It's a great instrument.
Look, let's play one of your songs, and then we'll come back and talk about it. It's a song, Half the Sky.
Half the sky. We hold up half the sky in wonder. But half the sky is bleeding, fading from sight. I see the sky. I see the sky is changing. We are gathering our sisters, changing rage into might. You can call me stuck in ways. You can say can tell me there's no way we can find what's always been true. I can tell you Darwin had it right when he called us the coolest of creatures. He saw a glimpse of modern day. We are leading our daughters like lambs as we plod on. So we must hold up half the sky. We'll hold up half the sky in wonder until the day of wonder gives way to a peace. When half the sky, half the sky rejoins us, our mothers, brothers, sisters holding the sky. Our mothers,
beautiful.
Thank you.
Deborah Pemberty performing Half the Sky. Now, before you tell us how did this song come about, something I always wonder about the composer. When you're composing music, do you write the lyrics first and then the musical arrangement or vice versa? It could go any way. It comes from inspiration or what?
It comes either way for me. A lot of times when I was writing in the past, it'd be I'd sit down at the piano and kind of what was in my hands. But that's why I was studying songwriting, because I wanted to not just have it in my hands. I wanted to pick a form or pick a topic and maybe write all the words first and then add the music. So now it really comes as a blend, because it's really hard to separate. There are times when I've written the words separately, but usually I'm trying to craft the melody with the words. You get the feeling all together, mm-hmm. and I'm sitting at the piano, or I'll go and sit in this one chair, which you can tell I've been sitting in a lot the past few years writing this stuff, and just really just pour over the words. And, you know, you write things out, you get in a brainstorming mode, and you throw things out, and then you just keep working on it. I mean, I'm kind of obsessive about my compositions. That's probably the 50th version. Mm-hmm. I do little edits, like a measure here or a word here.
So you teach also songwriting?
No. I was studying songwriting. Mm-hmm. I was doing at a local university was advising young musicians. I consider it teaching. It's very much, mm-hmm. but it's teaching people about themselves. Mm-hmm. It's helping them.
If you was teaching a young a young person interested in that, how would you start? And would you start with teaching them the lyrics first?
You mean in terms of writing music?
Yeah, in terms of putting it together, or is it a standard way? Is there a standard way?
I don't think there's a standard way, okay. No. I mean, it's such a personal thing. You know, I think it has to do with what people came from. You know, like I was in musicals and I was a singer first, so that's why words are so essential to me. And mm-hmm. all the music I listen to, I can't listen to music unless the words are mm-hmm. interesting and positive. Not necessarily it has to all be positive, but it can't be like extremely mm-hmm. negative or like, you know. It depends on, it's a personal thing, I think.
Now, how did this song come about?
How did I compose it? I was thinking about using a form, ABABA, which
so
is
So you
where
had
you
the
have.
Music first before the
No, a form just is just sort of saying I want to do it this way. Most songs are verse, chorus, verse, chorus.
Mm-hmm.
But this, And that means that the chorus is always repeated the same way or might have a little modification. Mm-hmm. This one doesn't have a true chorus. And it's through composed, meaning if you look at the words, that's why I handed you the music there. If you mm-hmm. look at the words, you'll never see a whole section that's completely repeated. And that works well in some ways for this issue because I can say so much. You know, I'm not coming back to something like We Are the World. You just keep singing We Are the mm-hmm. World at some mm-hmm. point. There's some verses, but you come to that chorus. But other songs like this, it's through composed. So mm-hmm. that was part of it. I sat down at the piano and I worked with the composition teacher, and then I sang it with my teacher, my singing teacher. And then my friend Chris Hackman, who's a total sweetheart, who's playing on my album, he's playing bass. Mm-hmm. He helped me make this track. And this is the first demo of it, but now I'm recording it again in more of a gospel style. There's mm-hmm. actually going to be a gospel choir and a children's choir on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to make it more of feeling like We Are the World. Mm-hmm. And I want to try to get it attached to the movement. Or used by like Barbara Boxer, you know, yeah. for her events, or you know, maybe one of the organizations around here. You might have some suggestions.
Yeah, Karen yeah. Bass, one of those.
Okay.
Now, how about I had another question I wanted to ask you. Well, I tell you what, let's take a break for our community calendar, and then we're going to come back for our second half where you're going to perform live for us, awesome. And I want to talk a little bit more about the movement.
Great, thanks so much.
This is the community calendar for upcoming events. This is a two-day event, Saturday, July 5th at 3 p.m. and 8 p.m., and Sunday, July the 6th at 5 p.m. Dennis Rowe Entertainment present the world premiere of Philly, a musical stage play. Philadelphia, 1985. City dropped bombs on its citizens. Pain, fear, fire, death, revolution, change, family, hope, and love. This play deals with the real story. The location is the Union Center for the Arts in downtown Los Angeles. And for more information, please call 818-754-4405. And this is also a two-day event, Friday, July the 18th, 2014, Saturday, July 19th, 2014. The Roby Theater Company is celebrating 20 years of excellence in Black theater from 1994 to 2014. And they present the first annual Paul Robeson Theater Festival. This event will be a presentation of 16 original short plays about Paul Robeson developed through the Roby Playwrights Program and performed and directed by alumni from Roby Theater Production and The Workshop. The location is the Los Angeles Theater Center, 514 South Spring Street, Los Angeles, California. And for more information, please contact the Roby Theater Company, 213-489-7402. And to get more information, we will be announcing lots of information on upcoming shows, and there will be featured presentation and musicals and a two-day extravaganza. If you have a community event that you would like announced on our show, send the information to dramastage1@yahoo.com. Attention, Earlene Anthony. The call-in number for our show is 800-893-9562. Now, back to our host.
Okay, thank you, Miss Earlene Anthony. We're back with our in-studio guest, Deborah Pemberty. Now, Deborah, the question I wanted to ask you before the break is what musicians or composers that really kind of influence you?
Oh, thank you. I've been listening a lot to Leonard Cohen in the past couple of years. There's an album he has from 2012 that some people find depressing, kind of slow, but to me it's like a balm for mm-hmm. your soul, and it's just amazing. There's a song called Going Home, I think it's the first track, and it says, going home without your burdens, going home without that costume that you wore. And to me it's about coming back to yourself after the pain that you've had, and maybe even coming back to your home without any burdens that you took from it. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's one influence. Nico Case, she's an amazing Americana singer and songwriter. Freaking love her. Jenny Lewis and the Watson Twins. Joni Mitchell, mm-hmm. Carole King, mm-hmm. Bob Dylan, James Taylor.
How about Michael Smith? Michael.
Michael W. Smith.
I don't really know him. Should I check him out?
Absolutely.
Yes,
okay, Michael W. Smith.
Okay, I'll write it down. Awesome. There's still got a lot I got to learn.
Michael W. Smith.
Now, let me ask you this. How can we get more musical programs involved in these after-school programs? They're always cutting back on music and the arts.
Yeah, they are. And it's really a big shame because there's evidence that that is what keeps people out of gangs. You know, that's keeps people motivated, teaches people discipline. I have a friend named Sarah Wass. He worked for the Harmony Project, which does after school, teaches kids music, but it also teaches them mentorship so that when they get higher up, they teach the younger kids. Mm-hmm. And they have a much higher graduation rate from high school. In fact, that's their main goal. It's not to get people to be the best musicians in the world, it's to get them to graduate from high school. So I suppose it's really watching Congress, and California just keeps cutting and cutting and cutting education. Mm-hmm. I mean, back since Reagan, right, it used to be free to go to the amazing universities around here. Mm-hmm. So I think just taking that really seriously, looking at the long view and not looking at the short-sighted, let's save a little bit on our tax bills, but it's a big thing to tackle. And mm-hmm. I think, you know, there's a lot of what's going on right now is people doing things for themselves. There's the Time Bank. You know about time banks? That's organized sharing. Yeah. I mean, people could just start, you know, just like, hey, we don't have this. Let's go start it.
Are you familiar with OLA?
No, what's that?
Yeah, that's a program that the composer, Dudamel.
Dudamel, the conductor of the LA Phil.
A musical program there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. I can't remember the name of it.
He gave them, what, like 1,000 violins and all that kind of stuff.
Right, very famous. Yeah, in Venezuela.
Real great musician. And
oh, definitely. Yeah, I've sung with him, actually. I got to sing on his first concert at the Hollywood Bowl. No, at the LA Phil. Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, now, as a choral singer. But
now, Deborah, what's the name of the song you're going to perform for us live?
Yeah, this is called Dream of Peace. And I wrote this right after I got to do a songwriting workshop with, I just happened to get to observe this workshop with Noel Paul Stuckey, who's Paul of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
Mm-hmm. And Paul, and Mary.
Right, yeah. And he has an organization where he gets people, it's a archive where you can archive all these songs that have to do with, like, you can look up feminism, find the songs about that, you can find the songs about environmentalism. Mm-hmm. And he just was trying to really encourage the 18 to 22-year-olds, the undergrads, and I just happened to be there along for the ride, to write about what's really meaningful and to change the world. Mm-hmm. And I ended up writing this song that weekend thinking it was really personal. But, and it's called Dream of Peace, and it's more about me and the life that I lived, which is very non-traditional. I've never been married. I'm not 22. don't laugh too hard. And it's about not having necessarily the things that you want, but still dreaming for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here's Deborah Pemberthy performing Dream of Peace.
And I hope this track is loud enough. It's a little bit less loud than the other ones. You might need to turn it up or just adjust it as it goes along. Yes. Okay. I found this letter. It was written 20 years ago. Written by a girl whose face I know. Still I wonder, maybe I'm not as good as I thought. It said things of peace. I'd find me a better way. Find me
That's a great song.
It's fun to sing. It's really fun to sing. I feel much better. I feel like 150% now.
I love the lyrics and the fact that it is talking about peace. We're going to get into our community roundtable in a minute because I'm going to ask Bobby to join us. Now, we also had a great musician in here named Mitch Greenhill.
Hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with Mitch. His father is Manny Greenhill, who managed and discovered Joan Baez.
Oh, wow. Okay.
For a long time.
Wonderful and activist singer.
And he run a production company called Folklore Productions.
Oh, I should check that out, huh?
Yeah, check him out. Mitch Greenhill. Has a band, nice little band that play all over Los Angeles.
Awesome.
I'll send you some info.
This
band is called
String Madness.
Madness.
Cool. String Madness. You know all the people, huh, Melvin?
You would love him. But that's an important song. Yeah, that song really fits in because that's what we need today. We need peace.
Mm-hmm. And dreaming of it, even though it seems so difficult.
Mm-hmm. We need peace all over the world. People need peace in their life, individual peace, community peace, et cetera, like that. Let me ask you this. We work here, you know, Los Angeles is known as the homeless capital of the United States, probably the world. And right down there on Skid Row, we have a lot of ladies, elderly, just laying in the streets.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts? I want to bring you into this because you work in the Skid Row area too. Yeah. How can we expand this movement that you're talking about to include this type of oppression of women also right here in our midst? Because L.A., one thing about L.A. probably got more millionaires than anywhere else in the United States.
Yeah.
But yet, Skid Row.
Yeah.
So what are your thoughts on that?
Let's take it over to Bobby. Yeah, I have some thoughts, but you're the expert on that, I think.
Expert, woo.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm just lifting you up.
Oh, yeah, I like that. It's all good. Well, like I say, we're working with Skid Row, like I say, like I want to put do a documentary featuring the women and the youth. And mm-hmm. I've been talking with a lot of different women. I know a lady down there on Skid Row. She's a part of a women empowerment group.
Cool.
And like with women having entrepreneurial skills and multitasking skills and everything.
That's exactly the stuff. Yeah.
So it's like mm-hmm. I feel like you get the women motivated and going, the men will follow because men chase women.
Well, yeah, there's just evidence that if you lift up women, they're going to take care of the rest of the community.
Yeah.
If you give money to men in developing countries, they don't put it into the community. The women put it into the children and the men, and they lift up the whole community. So, yeah, I think the same thing locally.
Yeah, because like I say, you know, women are one who really runs the church. Women are the caregivers and take care of everybody around them.
Mm-hmm. Although that can change. You guys can help out a little bit.
I mean, like I did a little bit with my daughter when she was born.
Okay, I'm not
I played that part. I said, I'd ready to go back and work a regular job.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not one to talk. I don't have kids, so I don't have to, I don't have to do that.
Yeah, but no, I'll be the first. I admit, you know, women are more struggling with people who give credit to. And where I come from, I used to be just like every other regular man.
Mm.
But I grew and matured and I understand life more. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
what are your thoughts on that?
I think it's exactly what Bobby was talking about, economic empowerment. And that's one of the main things about the Half the Sky movement. And really, the Half the Sky movement doesn't ignore America. It's really, I mean, I learned about at a meeting there about all the sex trafficking that's going on, even in Pasadena. And there was a city leader who works on it, and she was saying that a lot of it's happening through the churches.
Yeah, I was going to ask this question. How much do religion have to do with the oppression of women?
Well, that's a huge question.
Christianity have really grown because Christianity had a whole history for a long time of oppression of women.
Yeah,
Same thing with Judaism. Yeah. And now I think we're dealing with aspect of that.
Uh-huh.
In Islam, even though historically it wasn't always like that in Islam, it's just a recent phenomenon that we're dealing with now.
Yeah.
And there.
Well, I just think it's a really complicated question. I mean, I have some friends who are atheists, and when I joined this Episcopalian church, they thought my brain had fallen out of my head.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's just so many, and to me, it's like I'm vaguely Christian, but I'm more drawn to God than to Jesus, and so I go to a Unitarian church because I want to feel that we're all bonded through love. You know, and so I don't know there's any easy answer to say what role religion has played. It's played a terrible role in oppressing women, and it's played a great role in lifting up women. It depends on which organization, which person, which moment in history. But I think they have a role now. And I think that they need to look at the status of women within the churches and how women are treated in the churches and whether that makes sense. And, you know, we need to continue to evolve as a race.
What are your thoughts on the same-sex marriage movements that's,
a
lot of momentum.
Now. I totally believe in same-sex marriage. I believe that all people have the right to love who they love. I think it's really beautiful. I'm straight myself, but I have plenty of gay friends. And, you know, that's the way I feel about it. And I feel like even if someone doesn't believe that sexuality is right, this is a democratic country and we have separation of church and state. And so if you're going to believe that, then, you know, it's like the Episcopalians aren't going to go and tell the fundamentalist Christians what they need to think. Vice versa shouldn't be happening either, in my opinion.
great point. Now, is there a local chapter of the Half the Sky?
I don't believe so. I was looking, but what they do is you can go on their website and you can look up what organizations are working locally. And there's a really great organization called CAST, which is one recently won a presidential award from Obama for its work on human trafficking and a lot of sex trafficking issues. And what they do is they help victims. In fact, I'm going to try and get them to come to my event. I'm having this EP.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can you talk about your event?
Yeah.
You know, and give us all the basic information about it.
Yeah, I don't know if this is on camera here or how much you can see it, but Deborah Pemberthy, that actually doesn't show up that well, but it's a EP fundraising event, and it is July 17th from 8 p.m. till probably about 10:30. It's going to be to fundraise for my CD. It's going to be 6 songs, and the Half the Sky song is going to cost about $2,000 to record because I'm trying to really make it very full. So I'm doing a fundraising event, and really more just to get exposure for my music because I was so busy with my job. I really hadn't been really pushing my music, and the reason I want to push my music is because I think it can make a difference in the world. It's not really about aggrandizing myself. but it's about the power of music. And there's going to be an 8-year-old girl is going to sing a song about hope. I have the poster here that has all the different performers. Let me just grab that real quick. I met her yesterday at the Santa Monica Unitarian, and she's really excited. Her name is Lois Delaney Hutchinson. She's 8 and very adorable. And a band named Nona, who's an emo band that Sam Keeble, a new friend of mine who's my documentarian for the project, is playing. And there's going to be a sketch comedy. They said this was going to be easy sketch comedy. And then Ty Fance, who you may know him. He's a really great, sexy African-American comedian. He's going to do storytelling on the event, though. And then I'm going to sing my stuff and maybe have a music video that includes the music from the EP. So that's July 17th at 8 p.m. at Troop Unitarian at 300 South Los Robles Avenue in Pasadena. And if you forget any of that and you want to email me for anything, my email is just Debra, D-E-B-R-A, and then Mania, like excitement or mania, at mac.com, like Mac the computer. And I can give you details. Or if there's any way you'd like to help me with the Half the Sky song project, I need help with press and various things. And okay, that'd be great.
We'll continue to announce it every week. One more question before I have you do your closing comment and contact information. How much have the computer age changed the approach of musicians creating?
Have it enhanced it
or cut it back or what?
Oh, yeah, I think it's enhanced it. Yeah, I mean, I'm not the best person to ask because I've always been like, okay, you like had to get dragged into getting a cell phone. Even the answering machine, I was like, no, I don't need one of those. You know, so, I mean, I still have my tape player and I get my tapes out sometimes. But, people are, my producer, Tim Copsa, who's an amazing genius producer that I'm working with, he works with somebody across the country and they just mail tracks back together and it ends up sounding like the most beautiful film music, but they don't have to be in the same room. Computers. But that's because they have a really great working relationship to begin with. I don't think that can happen unless you already have that communication.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Closing comments. Once you give us your closing comments and your contact information, probably about 45 seconds.
All right, yeah. Comments, I mean, I'm just really happy to be here. This is a great synergistic group of people, even the people I met out in the hallway who were coming off the last show. It's just, you know, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to be celebrating the power of music and to get your encouragement for the music and the power it has to change the world. It was really interesting, your interview. They were talking about the power of music, and that's what I'm all about. So I just really appreciate being on here.
Okay.
Yeah, and check out the Half the Sky movement.org on the web. People can check that out, and if they want to contact me, it's just Debra, D-E-B-R-A, mania, at mac.com.
Okay, thank you, Debra.
Thank you.
Now, I would like to extend a special thanks to Debra Pemberty, Dennis Rowe, Bobby Buck, and my co-host, Earlene Anthony. Please listen to past shows of the Qumran Reports by Googling in Qumran Report. Thank you for tuning in to the Qumran Report and your host, Melvin Ishmael Johnston. May the peace and blessings of the life-giving creative spirit be upon you and upon your family. I leave you with the song that opened the show, Butterfly by Willis and Shantae of Positive Light Ministry.